Hello, everyone, and welcome to joining us for today's webinar. My name is Dr. Dane Marco Di Cesare, and I'm the Data Manager and Coordinator at the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I'll be facilitating the webinar today, and I have a few reminders for you. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage, nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint and handouts are available on the webpage, and I put the link in the chat box for you. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we will post a link to a brief evaluation. We are very pleased to have Dr. Catherine Stahl with us today to present our second webinar in the Strand 18 series, Shared Reading and Leveled Reading, Passing the Baton. Dr. Catherine Stahl is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. Dr. Stahl studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. Dr. Stahl has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in reading education from the University of Georgia in 2003. Let's welcome Dr. Stahl.
Thank you very much, Dane, and a warm, warm welcome to you as well. And welcome back to all of our participants, and a welcome to any of the participants that are attending for the first time. So today we are going to be talking about shared reading and leveled reading. And releasing responsibility to the students to be taking more responsibility for reading and comprehension. Our agenda today is to talk about some theoretical and developmental considerations in shared and guided reading, to look over and to discuss some research-validated protocols that teachers can use with stretch text, including Fourie and Wide Fourie, and then to talk about some small instructional level group essentials for maximizing comprehension. I would like to first start by getting acquainted with who you are in terms of what role, you know, as usual, I do like to find out what role you play in your school. So if you would actually just click the dot that describes what role you play in your school. Okay, let's see, I only have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, less 1 or 2 people could submit, a few people, maybe they're copying the materials. Okay, so we good. We have a nice majority of classroom teachers with some interventionists, and I'm so glad with the comprehension topic that we have an English language learner teacher, ENL teacher, and then others, so that's fantastic. And let's go to our next poll to see what grade levels that you work with. If you're a classroom teacher, I'm sure this will be a specific grade level. Those of you who are district people, L teachers, or interventionists, I'm sure are working with multiple grades. But if you're a classroom teacher, please let me know what Oh, great. So we have 2 principals. Very nice. I see there a superintendent with 2 principals. Fantastic. All right. And then I'm going to go to the next page, which is asking to get a view of how many of you attended our first webinar in this series related to the read aloud. And it certainly is not, you know, one is, you know, we do cover some of the same territory in both of those, but it certainly is not a prerequisite for you to have attended the last one. You know, this will be it's separate content. So you will not be at any disadvantage from not having attended the earlier one. And so I do, okay, So good. But it is nice that some of you did, so that you are going to have these consecutively. And keep in mind that you can always, all of the webinars are archived, and you can go back and listen to the previous webinars. And it's actually nice if you've listened to them once live, it's nice to know that they are there, because I've had several people tell me they like to go back and revisit and even take additional notes or hear things more than once, because the webinars, and I'm going to get to this on our next slide. So Dane, if you could take that off. Oh, so the materials that we'll be using, everything, you know, in terms of getting more information, our webinars are a springboard to get you started on more in-depth learning on your own. In whether it's reading the materials that are the supplementary materials, whether it is going and digging more deeply with your professional learning community, and then applying over time the ideas that you've heard in the webinar. But the webinars are simply a springboard for your further learning, using the more detailed information, whether it's the book, whether it's the free articles, or whether it's going back and digging more deeply into previous webinars, but mostly working with a school group as a professional learning community to see how you can apply these ideas in your own classrooms and schools and with people that you might be supervising, for those of you who are administrators or at the school level or district level, or an interventionist and literacy coach. So, you know, I do want to say a word or two about the application of the webinar content. One person, and I always do listen and apply the feedback that I receive from the webinars. It's so helpful to me. And so, we did have someone last week said that they were hoping that they would have the opportunity to see videos during the webinar, and to have more detailed information on particular aspects of the webinar from last week. And so, you know, I do want to remind you that a one-hour webinar can only provide a general overview on the topic. The very function of a webinar and its broad broadcasting is that it is to meet wide groups of people. You know, you saw there we have district administrators, we have preschool, kindergarten teachers. We have specialists like interventionists and English language teachers. And my role is to provide information that meets the needs and provide some general information to that very broad group. But time allocation, level differences, technology ambiguities prohibit the video demonstrations during a one-hour webinar. And also, we do have differences in knowledge level. Some of you probably have been in the field as long as I have, or if not longer, 40 or more years, and have lots of knowledge. And some of what I'll be sharing will be affirmation for you. Other people may be first-year teachers, and some of the terminology may be new, and you'll really need to dig more deeply. And so, you know, we recognize that this is really, you know, a springboard for learning where you are and what your uniques are. And also, when we talk about videos, you know, it's very difficult to find videos of exemplary practice. And so I would hope that you will use some information that you acquire from the webinar to look for some videos yourself, and then analyze the videos to talk in your professional learning communities about what are the strengths in those videos, what is the teacher doing well, what maybe could be improved upon, what were some of the strengths for the children, what could the children do well, what were the challenges that the children and the teacher had. And then do some of our Japanese lesson study, where you and your professional learning program and your professional learning community are taking turns videotaping yourself, bringing a 5-minute clip and using a conversation, a low inference conversation format to promote your own growth. There, I have included a PLC, a professional learning community article in your package this week to talk about some of the ways that you might do that yourselves. I've also, you know, if you want to look for videos on some of the topics that we are covering, because most videos, if you're looking at a video of something like a read aloud, it's going to be 15 minutes long. We can't really take the time of the webinar to do that. But you can certainly Google the topic, say teacher read aloud, interactive read aloud, and then find some of these read alouds. Examples of read alouds. You might also go look at some of the past webinars for more information. This one in particular is related to last week's topic on read alouds, and it actually has, it was a multiple webinar series on dialogic reading. So for those of you in pre-kindergarten and kindergarten, that might be useful for you to find more detail about dialogic reading. Also, the Frank Porter Graham modules that are called Connect modules, and they have a very nice, it's a whole learning module where you and your team of your professional learning community or you yourself can look at the videos and go through some problem-solving steps in the module. Also, Text-Talk scripts. There are 300 scripts for Text-Talk read-alouds on this Utah Department of Education. And again, I'm not saying they are all exemplary. They are not. But these are starting places for you to begin and for you to explore in your own schools and as part of your own professional growth. Same thing, today when we're doing shared reading, I even took out, when I work as a consultant with schools and I come in and do day-long workshops, we do take the opportunity to look at some videos or listen to some audio tapes. I actually, when I was producing this particular webinar, I took out an audio that I use with schools I work with as a consultant, because we just don't have the time in this format to be analyzing audio or video tapes. Google shared reading. YouTube is a wonderful opportunity. You know, they've got so many now that you can analyze yourself. Or if you are not privy, if you have or have not been aware of the Comprehensive Reading Solutions website, that has, you know, they have a whole series of videos. They have actual lessons written out, scripted out for shared reading, and then videos of it. So I encourage you to use this as part of your own professional learning on either your own time or as part of your professional learning communities and some professional development that you might be doing at your school level or at your grade level or even at the district level. So with that, let's move on to shared reading and our topic for today. So last week, when we talked about a healthy text complexity diet and a healthy diet for children, you know, we use this as an example of what needs to happen as a healthy diet for kids that incorporates that gradual release of responsibility for children in terms of comprehension instruction. And so last week we talked about the teacher read aloud, which is held whole class. That's what the WC stands for. That is where teachers have the most responsibility and are assuming the burden of work. So therefore, the text can be the most complex text, and our goals are comprehension and vocabulary there. Today, we're going to be talking about shared reading, still whole class. Kindergarten, a shared reading might be about 20 minutes. In kindergarten, pre-K, probably 15 minutes. However, in upper grades, like first, second, third grade, that shared reading could be anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes, the whole range, 20 to 45 minutes, depending on what you're incorporating into your shared reading. This is where you're still having a lot of teacher support. And so therefore, this is where you're using your stretch text. You know, those common core stretch text levels that are too hard for children to read at their by themselves. But they can do it, as Vygotsky would say, with the help of a more knowledgeable other. It's in the zone of proximal development. And our goals here are not for kids to read these texts by themselves on the first read. Our goals are comprehension, vocabulary, and increasing fluency over repeated exposures and over a shared context. with a more knowledgeable other. We're also later today going to talk about guided reading, that's a lowercase gr. This is in a small teacher-led group. That's what the TLG stands. It's a small group, but it's still teacher-led. All right. This you really need, principals and administrators, you need to have a 60-minute block for this. Because if you want the teachers to meet, kindergarten, they might be meeting four groups. First grade, early first grade, they might be meeting four groups. In second grade, they might have three 20-minute groups. And so because they're meeting multiple groups there. And so you really do need that amount of time. And I love this. Don Holdaway was the person who invented shared reading. And he's considered a very whole language-y kind of guy. However, a quote in his initial work on shared reading said, "Literacy, in as much as it has anything to do with life, wasn't meant to be easy." Boy, isn't that true. So for the shared book experience, here is what Holdaway's guidelines were when he first created shared book experience way back in 1982. And much of this still rings true for us today in 2016. Based on Vygotsky's 1978 notion of zone of proximal development, or the range that stretches between what a child can do independently and what a child can do with the support of the more knowledgeable other. That is the function of the shared book experience. We shouldn't be using easy books for this. These are stretch texts at the top of the child's zone of proximal development. Now, typically, he started with kindergartners, and our shared book experience with kindergartners and pre-Kers has not changed much since those days. When we think about shared reading in pre-K and kindergarten, we think about the text being a big book or some other, like a poetry chart or a morning message, something like that. He started with big books. It included jointly read predictable portions of text in which children chimed in those predictable portions. They identified some high-frequency vocabulary words, and that is where the teacher developed print concepts such as directionality, features of print such as punctuation, and beginning use of alphabetic phonetic principles. It was followed by students reading the text with partners or independently. And the effectiveness of the shared book experience was even confirmed with children in older grades later in 1996 with some studies in which children were doing shared reading in the upper grades, and later studies on comprehension-infused fluency-oriented reading instruction by the Schwann and Flugel and Kuhn team that we will be hearing a lot about later in this presentation. What are the non-negotiables of shared reading? This is what makes it a shared reading, because shared reading shares a lot of characteristics in its comprehension focus with a read aloud. But the thing that is the salient feature of shared reading is that children have their eyes on the text as well. It is still a community, whole class experience. It is a heterogeneous group. We want all the kids there. Just because a child in second grade can't decode doesn't mean they can't think. We do not want kids in special ed or in tier two leaving the classroom during shared reading. They have to be there to expand their thinking, because the little books that they are reading at their instructional level do not have the rich vocabulary, do not have the complexity of a vocabulary. They don't have the sophisticated vocabulary. They don't even have the causal event structure of a good, strong narrative text. So we have got to have our low-level children in the room during shared reading. That is a non-negotiable. It often involves repeated reading. This is the we do in the gradual release of responsibility. Naturally, there are developmental considerations in how this looks. It's not going to look the same in second grade as it does in kindergarten. That's the other reason I can't show you a video of it, because it's different by grade level. I'd have to show four videos. The goal of shared reading is to nudge our children beyond what they can do by themselves. It's a constructivist practice. If you believe in Vygotsky and that constructivist practice, this is the heart of shared reading. For novice readers below level L, shared reading is really the centerpiece of reading comprehension instruction, not guided reading, because this is where you get the text that are comprehensive and have a rich enough story, a rich enough character development, a rich enough episodic structure that you can really teach comprehension. They are stories that are in informational text. These are the texts that you might be using to teach novel concepts and to teach disciplinary and how knowledge is built. So here's what it looks like developmentally. You know, I talked about what it looks like in pre-K, kindergarten, and early grade one. These are the instructional targets: print concepts, phonemic awareness, high-frequency vocabulary, and oral vocabulary. So you're using big books and poetry charts and alphabet books and morning messages. However, that is not what we need. That is not the developmental need for a shared experience by late first grade and early grade three. Therefore, that's when your targets, your instructional developmental targets at those age levels are fluency, comprehension, and conceptual vocabulary. And in order to accomplish that, the best way to do it is with complex picture books. The award-winning picture books, the Caldecott winners, the rich books that might be found in the NYU Engage New York unit, the units that they have, in the our Basel readers. Those are sets already in place for you, and they are a good place for shared reading as long as the children have a copy of the text and can see the text. In grade three and beyond, you know, there it's really comprehension, and you're going to get more into the disciplinary materials. We are really going to be focusing on this, mostly this grade one to grade three, because I think that's where a lot of people really have the biggest misconceptions. I think with the big books, the morning message, you know, that's a very traditional shared reading. But when we're talking about doing shared reading with children in middle of first grade through third grade, it gets very mushy. How much should it hurt? When we talk about using these stretch texts, some of the controversy around the Common Core has been that the texts are hard for the kids. So how much should it hurt? It is important for us to remember this bullet, this first bullet is so important. Instructional levels are malleable, folks. The key word is instruction. A child's instructional level, especially related to comprehension, depends on the amount of instruction provided. And that is exactly why we have those shifts in the instructional level. You know, Maury Clay had a very low 90% accuracy was all that was needed for something to be at an instructional level. That was lower than the traditional Betts level, which he called 95. And it was because Maury Clay and Founis and Pinnell in small guided reading groups are providing kids at levels A through K with more instruction in the small group work. And so therefore, you can have a more difficult text. You can have less accuracy. The same is true for shared reading. That's where we're providing more instruction. So it certainly doesn't have to be at a kid's, you know, traditional instructional level, because you're providing instruction for it. So let's look at these text difficulty ranges for scaffolded instruction. So if this is based, these letters are based on both the letters are based on what Founis and Pinnell's 2015 instructional level expectations are for small group reading. Small group. That's what Founis and Pinnell do. Small group reading. Guided reading. All right. This is what they're recommending as year-end benchmarks in kindergarten DE for small group, JK, MN. So that means if we're doing shared reading, it has to be harder, all right? So that means for shared reading, in kindergarten, you're going to be doing the big book, so you're going to have a wide variety of readabilities and types of text, all right? First grade, for shared reading, you probably want to be within about a G to K kind of range. If not, I'm sorry, probably even higher than K. If now, by the end of the school year, if kids are reading level K, you can actually stretch into that L and M now, since this FNP level has changed. In second grade, we've got to start really being mindful of those lexiles. And we know that that we want... The Common Core is recommending that kids in second grade be able to comprehend text up to around 820 with help. That's what they call it, with assistance up to 820. So here we have and this is not in stone, but this is just some things to be thinking about so that you're providing text that's at stretch level, so that those kids who are having decoding problems and who are functioning below these text levels do at least have some exposure with support to higher levels of text. Now, gauging comprehension thresholds. This is another thing. Again, this first bullet, comprehension, and we talked about this last week in terms of read alouds and comprehension. Comprehension is an unconstrained skill. Unconstrained. It is never all or nothing. It has lots of moving parts. It has lots of moving parts. Our purpose for reading, what the genre is, the context. And we're talking about a context in shared reading where the teacher is doing a lot of the reading. The kids have the eyes on the text and the teacher is building the support for it. All right. Then we have child factors, prior knowledge. Let's hope that the teacher is situating the shared reading within a thematic unit, like we do in the Engage New York domains, or like they do in a Basel unit, there, or like you would do if you're really providing theme-based instruction, that you're building the prior knowledge for kids, you're having consecutive, you know, consistent vocabulary, so you are actually building bootstraps for comprehension that are supporting comprehension, and you're doing it during the shared reading experience. That's important. And when we talk about kids, about shared reading being the centerpiece for children reading below level L, those texts that they are reading at their instructional level do not have much volume. And fluency in second grade is one of the developmental goals. It's one of our developmental goals. And so what we know and what research has demonstrated is that the number of words that kids read each day influences, it actually feeds back into the consolidation of their decoding processes. And so it feeds into fluency. And it feeds into vocabulary development. And so if we have children who are only chugging along reading text levels E, they are not going to be exposed to the volume of words that your more proficient readers are exposed to. And so if all we are doing is having a kind of workshop model where kids are only reading text at their independent level, only seeing those words on a page, or if we only are doing maybe a guided reading kind of model and are never having the community eyes on text reading experience with high volumes of text, then in some ways our classroom structure is perpetuating the achievement gap. We have got to, the volume of text alone has important implications for that. We have got to provide our kids who are reading below level with volumes of text, but in a supported way. Also, complexity. The higher levels of text are an important source of sophisticated vocabulary. They are a source of comprehensive narrative text structures and plot connections. The very easy books, like those books at level E and F, sometimes kids have comprehension difficulties with them because they don't really have plot connections. They're too short to have the good narrative text structure. And they, you know, they jump around or they just have a portion of it. So these complex texts, we want to expose all of our kids, even special ed, to reading complex texts. But these texts do require instruction. They require teachers to plan ahead and to craft good questions and to really be thinking of what their deliberate moves are going to be in teaching these complex texts. Because we want to dig deeply into rich, compelling issues. We want these texts to serve as the vehicle for sustained strategy instruction. We want them to provide kids with opportunities for multiple viewpoints and to really engage in knowledge building through informational text. And to build bridges, this is where the reading and writing come together. We don't have reading for 45 minutes and writing for 45 minutes. We are writing in service to comprehension of the text we read. We are writing to communicate what we read and thought about. The biggie for these difficult texts, however, is no round robin reading. That is another one of the non-negotiables of shared reading. And I mean, but when I call round robin, I know not a single soul would admit to doing round robin these days. However, round robin, Tim Rosinski says round robin is any unrehearsed sight reading with turn taking. And nowadays that is frequently known by the names of popcorn reading, popsicle stick reading, where a teacher draws a name out of a popsicle stick or a popsicle stick out of a can, no catch the ball reading, where you throw a ball and the kid who reads it catches it, or no guerrilla combat reading, where you say to a child, I'm going to start off reading, but then I'm going to call on Maria, and then Maria can call on a friend, and we end up with kids trying to catch each other at not paying attention. So if we're not reading, if we are not doing all the reading ourselves, and these are difficult texts, but we're all having a community read, and we're not doing round robin, we're not calling on the best readers to read out loud, then what do we do? What we do is we do some echo reading, we have paired reading, we have partner reading, we have choral reading, we have repeated reading, we have and other kinds of assisted reading, whether it's on a tape, whether it's on a video, and we also have a protocol called fluency-oriented reading instruction, which incorporates all of these types of reading, which I'll elaborate on more in the next few slides. Fluency-oriented reading is a reading protocol designed for shared reading that was researched over about 8 to 10 years by several teams of researchers and has a very robust research background. It was all the research was done in second grade, but it is a protocol that would be applicable from about mid first grade level through third grade. All lessons are comprehension oriented. The children read material at their grade level with varying levels of teacher scaffolding. The students read text repeatedly to increase fluency. And they're taught a variety of ways to read. They have choral reading, partner reading, echo reading. And teachers, this kind of protocol maximizes the amount of time that kids are actually spending with their eyes on text and the volume of words that they're reading. All of these years of research, they got on average 1.77 to 1.8 years of growth for anybody reading above about a level D, year after year after year of these projects. What kind of text do we use? Well, you want a text that has about 400 to 650 words of text at the high end of the ZPD for most students, and you could use that table that I had on the previous slide as a gauge. The text that you use serves as an anchor text for a community reading experience. You want these award-winning books. These are the kinds of texts that are in a Basel Reader or they are in the Engage New York units for any of you who are using those domains. In planning for the lesson, when you plan the 4E lesson, you first think, okay, big ideas, what are the comprehension takeaways that I want my kids to come away with? What do I want to teach my kids related to making sense of text? And what is either the theme or what are the big ideas in this informational text? What meaning vocabulary will I have to teach? How do I want to teach it? And what word recognition obstacles will my students encounter? And you plan all this in advance. Teachers have to study the story in advance. Here is what the daily protocol looks like. One of the things that the Schwann and Flugel team found over time is that even after they stopped doing the research in the classrooms, this protocol is it's very teacher-friendly, it's very classroom-friendly, and it's very it's not something you have to do with rigid, rigorous fidelity, all right? It has a lot, it's malleable, related to the needs of the kids and the needs of the varying challenge of the text. All right, so the first day you would do, on Monday, you would do a teacher read aloud and a discussion of the big ideas of the text. So you have this chart. I'm going to go day by day with detail. So the first day, Monday, before reading, you would do your essential vocabulary, you would activate prior knowledge, do some macro level comprehension, like that means big ideas, all right, and relevant strategy instruction. Then you read the text aloud to the kids, but they have their eyes on the text. Then you're going to be having the discussion. And you're talking about comprehension standards 1 through 3, the big ideas and general inferences and themes of the text. That's Monday. Tuesday, you do an echo reading of a section of text. This is where you're actually doing point of contact vocabulary. You're actually questioning at the micro level of comprehension, or what we have come to know as the Common Core standards 4 through 6, author craft, why authors have used certain, you know, kinds of language. What is the text structure? How does the structure help us understand the text or build knowledge? And also a little coaching on word recognition. Here's what echo reading looks like. The teacher reads, and we're not doing this in a small group. Remember, we're doing this as this teacher is with the whole class. This actually is a kindergarten teacher doing this. So you echo read it, the teacher reads it first, a section, not a sentence, but several sentences or a page, she reads it, and then the children read it back. Then she reads, and then there's a discussion. Then she reads it, then the children read it back, there's some discussion. Wednesday is choral reading, all right? Wednesday is choral reading. If time, possibly partner reading. Thursday, there's always partner reading or possibly some elaborate vocabulary or comprehension strategy practice. Partner reading. Partner reading is really an essential tool in shared reading because that's when children are really having support from each other. It's giving them accountability and more eyes on text time. We know from the research by Beth Meisinger that self-selected partners are one of the most effective ways for kids to get the most reading done and have the most time on task if they select their own partner. Either that or a ranking system where your most skilled reader, like number one being most skilled, is paired with number 13, number two is paired with number 14. We don't want the most skilled paired with the least skilled. Guidelines are provided to the kids how to do partner reading, but they're not a lot of rules. Here's what partner reading looks like. Okay. Comprehension extensions include writing in response to text, small group discussions, thematic projects, extended vocabulary activities. So all of these things would be done after doing all those various kinds of shared reading. So here again is what we do with the 4E model. So here again, you see Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Now, as I said, they did this research over a period of about 8 to 10 years. Now, after the first 4 or 5 years, they were getting such phenomenal results with all kinds of schools, all kinds of children. And the researcher said, well, is it because they're rereading the same text every day? What if we give them different texts? Is it the volume of text and the difficulty of text that's causing the results? So what they did is then they invented wide reading. So the protocol for wide reading is Monday, exactly the same. Tuesday, exactly the same. Wednesday is when now in wide reading, on Wednesday, you don't do choral reading. Wednesday, you do your comprehension activities. You do some kind of extension activities and a written response to text, all right, that's pure comprehension. Now, remember, you're doing comprehension on Monday and Tuesday. You heard all those discussions that you were having during reading. But here, this is some kind of extension, a writing or a small group discussion activity. In wide reading, on Thursday, you echo read a brand new text and do a quick comprehension activity with it. On Friday, this is echo read text 3. This number should not be 2, it should be 3. It's the third text. So in wide reading, you are reading 3 different texts in a week, but they should be on the same topic. As I said, 4E is very malleable. So if you have an easier text, all right, you might be also doing something like these other forms of differentiation. All right, so for example, here's another kind of 4E with differentiation. First day, you do your business as usual. Teacher read aloud, pre-reading activities, Common Core Standards 1 through 3. Then on Tuesday, day 2, you do what I like to call the three-ring circus. Here's what the three-ring circus is. So in your three-ring circus, you have the advanced readers are going to read the text independently. They don't need your help. For them, it's not really a stretch text. It's at their level. They can read it independently, maybe even do a little comprehension something something afterwards if time allows. The middle group of students, the grade level readers, they read the text with a partner, and the below level readers read the text at a table with you, receiving either echo reading or you reading it with them again and providing some comprehension discussion as needed. That's the three ring circus. And then the next day, everybody partner reads, and then you're doing a couple days of extensions. Or let's say you're at the end of your thematic unit. You might decide to do a read aloud one day, partner reading, and then the whole rest of the week, the kids are doing their writing because they're finishing up a unit and have some research projects that they're working on, or some other kind of writing that they're working on, or some other comprehension activity that is going to require writing and our small group activities. Okay, so now we are going to move into what about small group instruction, all right? Small, and I know that, you know, we have the Founis and Pinnell version of guided reading. That's the capital GR. But all of us, for years and years, before Founis and Pinnell ever wrote that book, Guided Reading, and did what they called guided reading, most of us as good teachers were doing small group instruction with kids reading text at their instructional level. So that's what we're talking about here and what we're going to be talking about next. And let me just qualify. Today, I am not going to be able to teach you how to do a guided reading lesson, all right? The format demands at each level are very, very different. If you and your team of teachers really need more expertise in how to do some good small group instructional level reading, I recommend that you study and engage in a school professional learning community using that Founis and Pinnell guided reading book. I know they're coming out with a new edition, but I'll be honest with you, there is nothing wrong with the old edition. It, you know, that is probably the best way, I think, to really learn the specifics of what should be happening when you're at the table with kids that are at a level A through K. And I recommend, I'm a big advocate for recording your own videos, because that way it is school and district specific in terms of what you want your kids to be able to do. That's the best. Now, keep in mind, I am only talking today about guided reading as it relates to the developmental essentials for comprehension. Part of the guided reading responsibility is to teach kids also how to use the alphabetic system within the orchestration of that process. I am only talking about comprehension today, even though I value as much as anybody and more than many the role of using the alphabetic system. Okay, so guided reading in kindergarten and early grade one, I'm talking about text levels A through G. For those little short books, you only need about 15 minutes per group, all right? Now, some of the salient things that you need to be doing is, first of all, you need to read the Founis and Pinnell book on how to develop an appropriate book introduction. And how to even select books that are the right books for your kids. And then you need weekly running records with error analysis. One of the best ways at this level to figure out whether kids are reading for meaning and orchestrating meaning into the connected text reading process is by looking at your MSV analysis of your running record. That's how you know if they're reading for meaning. Also, after each text reading, have the kids retell the entire text to their partner in the group. Please do not do, you know, so often I hear teachers saying, tell me the beginning, then what happened next, then what happened next. And they're telling that to each single individual child, but the poor little 5 and 6 year olds are never having the opportunity or the responsibility to tell everything about the text that they read. And these are short texts. The kids can do this, all right? And then what happens, and we want, in the small guided reading group, we do want teachers to provide explicit instruction and scaffolding and questioning to teach kids how to connect plot sequences, how to organizing their retelling using text structures, how to generate inferences, and how to discriminate levels of importance. Yes, we want teachers teaching that, but we've got to have kids at the guided reading table retelling the story from start to finish or the informational text. What was important in what you just read? What did you learn from what you just read? From the whole thing to their partner, because otherwise, when they are taking that test at the F&P benchmark kit, the poor little child is going to read the story to the teacher, think they've done a jam-up job and done a beautiful job, and then the teacher says, tell me everything from start to finish, and they're lost. And so we want for kids at the reading table to be telling a whole retelling at the table instructionally before we test them on doing that. That is of key importance. This might be controversial to some. Please do not use comprehension ratings to hold children back from moving children up in levels between levels A to G. This is important because one of the things we need to remember is that comprehension is an unconstrained skill. I can teach comprehension if a child can read a level E text at 98% accuracy, but isn't very efficient at retelling that story or that informational text. Guess what? I can still teach that child how to do that with a level F text. I don't need him in a level E text to teach him comprehension. And in fact, I might be able to do it better with a level F text because it's going to be more likely to have a better story structure with more connective tissue. Also, it's going to have information that is more well-organized instead of just random idea units on a page. So let's not, in these low levels, the other reason that I am very hesitant to hold kids back is because often if we are using a benchmark kit, many of the inter-rater reliability on these benchmark kit rating systems is very low. We would have conversations about text. For one thing, there aren't the exact same questions being asked. There aren't the exact same prompts being generated from teacher to teacher. And what one teacher thinks is a good retelling and sufficient, another teacher thinks is inadequate. And so there's not really inter-rater reliability on this. The third reason is that these benchmark kits that are doing comprehension are very subjective. They do not have good technical data like you would find in something like the qualitative reading inventory, where they have exact normative data on what percentage of idea units children at an instructional level are retelling on each text. We don't have any of that kind of technical data that is provided for us on these benchmark kits. And so those are the reasons why we want to be very cautious about holding these children back in levels. If they are reading accurately at these levels, let's at least in levels A through G put them at the next level, teach them comprehension in their small group and their large group, and do some good comprehension instruction. But let's be very cautious about holding them back if they're able to read the text at these levels. Now let's move to text levels H through K. In assessment, reading accuracy, I would say, should still probably trump an unreliable rating in determining instructional level. At this stage, the reading is still occurring at the table, but that's the teacher table. And from this point, it's going to be called the T table. That means the table where the teacher is providing instruction. However, in addition, these children at these levels do need to be learning how to provide a brief written response to text at the teacher table, which may be followed up also at the station. And then the next day when they come back to the teacher table, they're going to bring their written response back and we're going to talk about it. You know, the writing cannot be separated from the comprehension instruction because the only way that we know what a child has understood is what they say to us or what they're writing. So we want to really embed the writing in response to text as a very intricate part of comprehension instruction at this guided reading table. And here, this is also super important. At these stage levels, from levels H through level K, we need to be shifting from a picture walk. You know, the format of the lesson should no more be, let's do a picture walk, now read at the table, and then I'm going to have some teaching points. But now the better format is the directed reading thinking activity. All right. And the directed reading thinking activity means that, all right, what you will do is you will, while you're planning your lesson for your guided reading lesson, you segment the text. And text at these levels, especially informational text at levels late, you know, G, H, I, J, K, often already have little chapters. And so you would segment the text during planning. You would overview predictions for the book, but also the children are also going to be making some predictions by section. So basically, children make a prediction and justify it for a section of text, not for the whole text, a section of text. They have to come up with a justification for that prediction. Then they would read the text silently. After reading, you as the teacher facilitate a conversation about that section of text, including the verification of the prediction and a taking stock. Because at this juncture, a lot of these kids are in late first grade, early second grade. The texts are longer, but these are still 6 and 7 year olds. So we want to make sure that intermittently we are taking stock. If it's an informational text, we want to clarify that they are understanding and that they don't have misconceptions. And so the DRTA, and folks, there is a lot written on the directed reading thinking activity if you need more information about that. It is a very robust teaching practice. And so I hope you will investigate it through many of these sources. You know, Jim Bauman has done research in it. I did research in it. And it is a very effective strategy for both narrative and informational text at all levels, particularly in the guided reading at this level. Now, what about guided reading from the mid grade 2 and beyond? For those of you who are teaching second grade, or children who maybe you're teaching second grade and some of your children are at these upper levels, at the small group, you really need to be meeting with them for 20 to 30 minutes for kids beyond level K. You don't have to meet with them every day. Okay, that's how, how do I fit all this in? You do not need to meet with those children who are beyond level K every day. You probably don't even need to meet with your level I and J kids every day, all right? Because their texts are longer. They do have to do writing in response to the text. Now, if you'll notice that when kids get beyond level K, all right, even Fountas and Pinnell switch over to their instructional level is, for accuracy, it's 95% and above now. And it's because more of the work is done independently. The reading is now done away from the teaching table. The reading is done at the independent reading station that is occurring while the teacher is teaching other groups at the teaching table. All right. Also, the teacher table at these levels is the site for discussion about what kids read, for seeing whether they're applying the comprehension strategies that you taught in the read aloud and that you taught in shared reading as a community. Can they apply it with text at their level? The table is also the site for refining what children are writing in response to reading. So you might be having a discussion about reading one day, but then the next day, then the other day that you're meeting with your group, you all are talking about what they've written in response to text and really helping them refine that. The teacher table now is for kids with common developmental needs or kids who might be working on common projects. Because now it might be reading in service to learning something about science or doing an author study or reading a particular genre or doing a book club. But the teacher table still, because you have those kids for 20 minutes or maybe even 30 minutes, it still provides deeper levels of comprehension instruction than is possible in a one-to-one conference. In the one-to-one conference, you as the poor teacher are spread too thin, and you can't get to deep levels of comprehension. It's too hit and miss. It's too superficial. That's why you need the small group. That's why you need this. The other thing that happens beyond level K is you need to switch to Lexiles and abandon the qualitative leveling systems, because the Lexiles are really more what contributes. The factors that contribute to the Lexile scale are more equivalent to what cause comprehension difficulties. And so you want to transition to the Lexile scale, and you want to make sure that your assessments and that when you are deciding on an instructional level now, you are going to combine accuracy and comprehension questions, whether the kids can answer comprehension questions. Or you want to use a computer-based test that provides Lexiles. Because remember, comprehension is unconstrained, and there are all those pressure points that contribute it, and it's going to be a lot more messy. It is not a bullseye. Your comprehension level is not a bullseye. So you do not want to spend 3 days, three times a year, getting an approximate comprehension level. You want to do it efficiently and recognize intellectually, theoretically, that comprehension levels are a malleable band. Okay, questions. That's a lot of information to swallow, I know. But I know that you will be, to expand this information, you will be doing some additional reading in your professional learning community. You will be, or by yourself, or you will be looking at some other videos, investigating maybe that Comprehensive Reading Solutions website, which has about 30 webinars on it as well. That does. You can dig back more deeply into some of our other webinars on comprehension and do some, and at a minimum, read the articles that I have provided for you or even in the book. It provides the detailed information. How about questions? Because I also provided some sort of controversial information for you to ponder and to talk about with your colleagues. Lots to reflect upon. I love comprehension. That's what I actually love about comprehension. Is it really? I think that's why 40 years into learning how to be a teacher, that's why I think I still love teaching. Because there is always something new to learn, and it's dynamic. It changes by the group of people that you're working with. You know, when I was working with young children, I love that. I'm working with adults now. I love that. So there's always more to learn, especially when you're talking about something like comprehension. that has so many moving parts. It's dynamic. Good. I see some people typing. I look forward to your conversation, your comments, your experience, your questions. And do know that I'm always available for you by email. Do know that a phone call, I'm available by email, I'm available by phone. I'd love to come see you at your school to see how you are enacting some of these things that I'm passionate about. Now, Dawn, I saw that you were typing. I wonder why it's not showing up. Dawn, did you put something in or did you take it out? Because I'm not seeing it now. I'd love to hear from you. I hate being out here in space all by myself. Thank you, Dawn. Well, again, I think, Dawn, I think the important thing to consider at those levels is what you're doing instructionally. You know, that I think what you really want to make, I would hate to hold elves back. You know, no, I don't want them to get so far that they're beyond their zone of proximal development. But do you really think they could understand, you know, is there something they could understand at a level C that they can't understand at a level D? I don't think comprehension works that way. All right. I think things like identifying key ideas, I think things like telling a story in a narrative structure, I think that if you can do it at an E, you can teach somebody to do it at an E. I also believe that what's happening is kids in the instructional, in that small group setting, I can promise you they are not being given the opportunity to be held accountable individually to retell that whole book. I can promise you that's not happening. But I think that if kids start being held accountable to do that at the reading table, you will find, Dawn and you others, that they will be more likely to be able to do it when they're administered the test. The other thing is these tests are being administered in very subjective ways. You know, what we think, you know, my students, just last night we were studying in my assessment class, we were studying the QRI. And so we looked at the norms that they have in the QRI in whatever is the last chapter, whether it's chapter, I think now it's chapter 14 or chapter 13. Maybe it's chapter 13 in the 6th edition. Either chapter 13 or 14 where they have the technical information. My students were shocked to find out that 18% for a particular passage that we were looking at, the average retelling for the fourth grader was 18%. That's not very much. Or the average retelling for a first grade passage was 25% of the content. If you hadn't read those norms, you would have thought if somebody just told you, 25% of what happened in the book, you would say, gee, that wasn't a very good retelling. But guess what? That's pretty typical. So how do we judge what makes a sufficient retelling if we don't have technical information in that benchmark kit? We don't know what's a good retelling. And there are not, you know, it's not like we have, 10 questions, and if the child answers 8 out of 10 questions, we'll say that's adequate. You know, it's totally reliant on that poor child's retelling. So let's practice, let's do a better job with comprehension at the reading table instructionally, so then all children can be successful at their level when they are retelling. That's where we really want to improve what we're doing for kids. Good. I see some other folks typing. I love that. As you're typing, I want to make sure that you also, your feedback is so important to me. I really used it to inform my first few slides this evening. So please fill your, you know, please take a few minutes. It's a very brief survey to fill out your SurveyMonkey survey before you abandon ship for us. And I hope you'll join us next week. Next week is really going to be some cutting edge stuff. I'm still, you know, you're still on. Those of you who are typing, keep on typing. I just thought I'd fill some dead time. I hope you will be sure to join us next week. And please tell your reading interventionist to come too, because next week we are going to be talking about a very new topic. What do we do with those kids in kindergarten, first and second grade, who now that the Common Core, we've upped the ante on how we're teaching comprehension in kindergarten and first and second grade. That's the good news about the Common Core. But now, those of us who are teaching these grades, we've recognized, hey, our kids, even before we can tell, before they're decoding, some of our kids have comprehension challenges. And so what can we do intervention-wise? What can we do intervention-wise for these kids? So please, folks, beg your interventionists to come and to watch our webinar next week. And these are going to be interventions, but they're also, for you classroom teacher, these are going to be little 15-minute things that you can also do in your classroom. So they're categorized as intervention, but you can do them in your classroom too. And we'll talk about some ways to structure that for you. So I hope, Stephanie, keep on, and Shelley, please keep on typing. I'm still here with you. We still have 6 more minutes, so I'm still with you, but I just thought some of you could go ahead and use this time also to be thinking about, you know, what we're doing next week, this same time, same station, next Wednesday. Providing the leading edge, early comprehension intervention. It can be done by you in your classroom, or it can also be done by an interventionist, including also get your speech and language teacher to come, because that's a lot of the stuff at this level. Really, your speech and language teacher is going to be your jewel of the school in helping you with comprehension issues for these babies. Stephanie, are you still with me? Did you type something? Oh, great. Should students receive reading support for fluency only? If not, at what level should... Oh, wow, that's a great segue to what we're going to be talking about next week. But I think, you know, as I said, the best comprehension, the centerpiece of comprehension instruction is that shared reading done by the classroom teacher. So the best comprehension instruction is first with the read aloud, doing explicit comprehension that we talked about last week at the read aloud, with you carrying the burden, then doing it in shared reading, and then doing explicit comprehension instruction at the guided reading table. So those things have to happen explicitly. And I think we will talk about intervention next week, but even the interventions that I'm going to suggest next week mostly happen by you, the classroom teacher. And so that really is the place where comprehension intervention needs to happen. And you know your children best, and you also know what their prior knowledge is. So if you're doing a unit on plants, let's do our comprehension intervention. Let's do a read aloud with plants and do comprehension instruction. Let's do a shared reading with plants and do comprehension work. Let's do maybe some little books on plants. Nowadays you have them, or even other informational texts, and get kids to apply the same ideas with it. So comprehension at these levels, the intervention is best provided by you, the classroom teacher. That's the first place to begin. And we will talk about things that can happen. Most schools, one of the challenges with comprehension intervention is that most schools barely have enough interventionists to do the specific, the foundational skills. So they're not doing the content. Comprehension, if you're going to teach comprehension, you need some content, and that's happening in the classroom. So we'll talk about that. I'm so glad you asked that question because you are ahead of me. You are going where we will go together next week. I look forward to seeing all of you next week. Please fill out our SurveyMonkey survey. It only takes you a few minutes. And I sure look forward to your feedback, things that were helpful to you. And I look forward. And Kathleen is still typing. Go ahead, Kathleen. We're on air about another minute or so. So if you get that question in, we'll have a minute. I'll have a minute to answer it as well. Oh, good. I look forward to seeing you next week, too. I think it'll be another really provocative conversation. So thank you all. And Dane, I think I'll stay, I know Molly always asked me to stay on for a minute afterwards, so I'll do that as well. So.
Right. I just also wanted to say thank you so much for today's webinar. It was fantastic. A lot of wonderful information, and I'm so pleased that we have you for one more week. So I hope everyone has registered and is looking forward to it as much as I am.
Thank you, Dane.
You're welcome.
So I'll stay on after you turn off the video.